Hello and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retal.
Hello and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as episode 75 of The Amazing Spider-Cast. In it, Chris and Bob Retal look at Amazing Spider-Man number 6 through 10. This episode was originally released on the Amazing Spider-Cast feed on June 28th, 2008.
Alright, well, break out the parades, break out the fireworks. This is the 75th episode of the Amazing Spider-Cast, and I'm your host, Chris Johnson. Unfortunately, Jen is not here because she is either on her way, preparing, or at some convention for Red vs. Blue, which is this internet Halo video thing that she's a huge fan of, and I don't know if she wants me to announce this on the podcast or not, but she's actually going to be doing some graphics work for the Red vs. Blue guys, which is just awesome for her, and I'm sure she'll tell all about it when she gets back. But joining me for this episode, we have Mr. Bob Retal from the Comic Book Page Podcast.
Hello, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course, Bob.
Hey, is Jen a red or a blue in Red versus Blue? I know absolutely nothing about that. I don't know if you pick a side or what.
Well, it's based on the Halo video game, and apparently there's the red side and the blue side, and it's playing off of the capture the flag option on Halo. And I've only seen a couple of episodes. I don't know very much about it. But Jen's really into it, and she actually got our good buddy Juan into it, and one time when it was the four of us for one of the top five episodes we did, her and Juan were just talking about Red versus Blue and shooting quotes off to each other, and me and Chris Gallagher were just like chatting each other on Skype while they were for like 20 minutes while they were doing all this Red versus Blue stuff.
Yeah, I remember that. It's like, you know what? Kind of like scratching exactly. My head. Okay.
We're just like, I wonder how long they'll notice when we're here, you know? And speaking of Juan, if you have not already picked them up, run, don't walk to your local comic shop or DCBS or Heroes Corner, wherever you get your comics, and make sure you get Runaways number 30 and Moby Dick number 4 for Marvel, because our good buddy Juan Castro did some inking in those two books. And it's awesome that Juan, he's been, you know, inking. He inked a couple of pages for Marvel in the past, and it's awesome that he's, you know, getting more inking work over there and building up his cred, and it's awesome that, and he actually, and this was awesome of you, Juan, he actually put a Amazing Spider-Cast Easter egg onto one of the pages, but unfortunately the colorist kind of covered it up. But that was still really awesome of you, Juan. So, go out there, pick up those two books if you haven't already, and support a good friend of the show.
I am definitely, well, I get Runaways. I'm not getting the Moby Dick series, so I'm probably not going to get issue 4 out of context of that, but I definitely am going to get Runaways.
Awesome. And, well, speaking of you, Bob, I think you made a quite interesting purchase off of eBay recently.
Indeed I did. Amazing Spider-Man number 1.
Woohoo!
And I got number 2 a couple of weeks ago also. I'm only missing number 4 and number 8. Now I almost had number 4, and then that kind of was an interesting tale. But that all worked out for the best. You want me to tell that story?
Sure.
Yeah, so I bought number I've been buying on eBay for years, like 7 or 8 years. I've bought hundreds of things on eBay, and I've never had a problem. So I bought Amazing Spider-Man number 4. It's CGC'd. It was a 4.0, so theoretically, you know, it'll be the grade that I want. It was a guy in Australia. So I bought it, paid the money. He had a couple of hundred feedback. That was another of my principles is, you know, you usually don't buy something, especially something expensive, from someone with only a couple of feedback or, you know, with negatives or anything. This guy had a lot of feedback. And it just, he never said, well, he replied at first saying, oh, yeah, it's going to ship out and, you know, all this. And then he just stopped responding to emails and such. And it never came. And ultimately, I ended up reporting him to eBay and reported it to the credit card company. And that's the one thing you get out of this is always use your credit card when you're going to use eBay purchases, because if all else fails, in this case it did, because by the time I was trying to give the guy the benefit of the doubt, and I went past the 60-day window, and after 60 days after the purchase, eBay will pretty much not do anything for you. So I learned that lesson, and I'll raise the issues a lot earlier in future, after about 30 or 40 days. But in this case, eBay said, oh, call your credit card company. So I called the credit card company. They credited my account, got my money back for it. And then they also, a little later, since eBay, they sent me a coupon for the full amount also that I could use on another purchase. And I ended up using that coupon on the Spider-Man number one. So I kind of got double my money back on the Amazing Spider-Man number four. But on the bad side is I still need Amazing Spider-Man number four, so I've got my eyes out for it.
And we both know who has number eight.
Yeah, Chris Gallo. Curse you, Gallo. Number eight from up in WonderCon, I think he got it.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So, yeah, I will got my eyes out on it. Oh, another eBay tip if you're searching for Spider-Man comics, and people who are listening to this show will look for Spider-Man comics. It is the Amazing Spider-Cast. Search, when you search for, you know, I always put, you know, Spider-Man, the proper spelling of Spider-Man. And you always also want to search for Spider-Man or Spider-Man, all one word. Because you would not believe how many people post their Spider-Man comic books up as Spider-Man, all one word, like Superman. And, I mean, even old rare ones like I'm trying to get. Like a number four and number eight that I'm bidding on right now. Let me just check here. The number eight that I'm bidding on is Spider-Man, all one word. So if I was just searching eBay for Spider-Man and eight, I would have never found this. Word to the wise.
Yes, and I thank you for introducing me to Auction Sniper, because it has been quite an assistance.
Yeah, that's I put things out, and I've been collecting extra Bowen busts lately that I had not picked up the first time around. I just throw these Auction Snipers out there at like a relatively low price, and then I forget about them, and you know, 75-80% of the time I get outbid and I don't worry about it. But every now and again, it'll come up and it's like, you won. And it's like, oh, really? It's like, I got an Atuma mini bust, you know, and I didn't buy that the first time around. I got an Atuma mini bust for $13.
Whoa.
A Bowen mini bust. And that, like, retailed at like $60 or something. I got a Mr. Fix-It, you know, the Hulk Mr. Fix-It. That was a
right.
An internet exclusive. I got that for $20.
Oh, nice.
You know, just like all kinds of things. It's just, you know, you put out, and, you know, a lot of ones I bid on, nothing comes of it. I don't worry about it, you know. It's the same thing with, you know, the Spider-Man number one. I wasn't expecting to get it at what I was bidding for it. You know, I ended up getting it for less than half a guide.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, and it's in decent shape. It's it was CGC also. It had some minor professional restoration on it. So, you know, it's actual, you know, but it CGC'd at 4.0, you know, with a little bit of professional restoration, which was a little bit of color touch and some spine repair. but it looks really nice. I mean, it's a lot nicer than what I would have ever expected to get for myself. So,
right.
So we're here for installment number two of the reviews of Spider-Man from start to whenever you decide to stop doing it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And for this one, we're going to be doing issues 6 through 10 of Amazing Spider-Man. And I think we might hit annual number one in the next one, which will be awesome to review.
I love that one.
That was just so much fun. Oh, yeah.
It has some of the best full-page spreads worked into the story, especially for the day. I mean, that was really unique at the time. Now they have full-page and double-page spreads all over the place.
Yeah,
but back then, back then, that was not something that was done very much. So the impact of it and how it was used in the story was just very nicely done.
I like that Electro one, first one in there, of Spidey socking it to Electro.
Yeah. So we're going to start now on Face-to-Face with the Lizard.
Oh, yeah. And this one is, of course, written by Stan the Man Lee, drawn by Sturdy Steve Ditko, and lettered by Art Simek. And for a summary of this issue, it's basically the first appearance of the Lizard. And as opposed to in some of the interpretations like the 90s version and the recent Spectacular Spider-Man, the Lizard, Kurt Connors was actually down in the Florida Everglades, and Peter, worked as Spider-Man. It was printed in the Daily Bugle by Jonah just to sell papers that, Spider-Man, is he going to fight the Lizard? The Bugle challenges Spider-Man to fight the Lizard in Florida. And Peter's like, I could use some money for pictures, And so he addressed his Spider-Man. He's like, I'm going to go down to Florida. I'm going to fight this Lizard guy. Why don't you get a photographer to cover the story? And so, as Peter Parker, he obviously gets the job. And Jonah and Peter both go down to Florida. And Spider-Man dukes it out with the Lizard, eventually finding out that it was the Lizard expert that he was going to try to get in contact with, Kurt Connors. And using his scientific acumen, he develops an antidote to change the Lizard back to Kurt Connors. And in the end, the antidote works, and Connors changes back. And it's all a happy ending. Unfortunately for Peter, of course, with that dreaded Parker luck, Jonah thinks that the whole Lizard was a publicity stunt. And he rips off the pictures that Peter had taken, and so no money for him.
Yeah, too bad for old Pete there. It was interesting about this one, especially as you mentioned, the lizard had sort of human intellect. He wasn't exactly Kurt Connors, but he, spouted a lot of, Stan Lee villain prose, you dare defy the Lizard, you'll pay for that folly, and he does some pretty impressive stuff. Like on page two there, he's like ripping that tree off the ground. That's a huge tree, man. That's like got like a 10-foot diameter or something,
stump like, left, and then the entire tree.
Yeah, it's like not he pulled the roots out. He like snapped that tree right off. I mean, that's like...
Why didn't he try to beat Spider-Man with one of those, just like rip a tree up and start whacking away at him?
But this is a good issue. I mean, this was the first really old Spider-Man comic I ever bought. When I was in earnest first going back to buy older Spider-Man books, I found a really decent deal at a convention on Spider-Man number 6, and it was the first one that I got that was old, and that was kind of like my starting point of, if I got this one, getting all of them sort of attainable, So I kind of started in on that, and that was the beginning of the end, actually.
Yeah. This is one of my all-time favorite Spider-Man issues, and I did buy a copy of it, which I've got framed hanging on my wall.
Yeah, this is also makes you wonder, Peter Parker, I mean, the guy's got to be Reed Richards-like, and he's like a high school kid. He's like, oh, yeah, let me just like whip out this antidote to turn this really hardcore biochemist who created it. Yeah, I'll just whip out this antidote here. It's like, man, you know, okay.
Well, we know in the space of one panel he was able to make web shooters and web fluid. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he could have made some coin for himself just getting a job and patenting some of this stuff, but he's altruistic, so
yeah.
What are we going to do? You know?
And of course, this is the issue with the infamous web skis that he made for himself.
Well, kind of like the web pontoons, right? He's like floating through the swamp on them. I find it interesting that we'll talk about it in the next issue with the Vulture, but all these abandoned ruin kind of places that are like right next to the town, you know, so he's out in the middle of the Everglades and all of a sudden there's this giant Spanish fort there that the Lizard's taken up residence in. And it's like, oh, it seems like if it's close enough, and then he's like really close and he goes, oh, look at that house over there. That must be Kurt Connor's house. You know, so it's not that far out in the swamp. And you'd think that somebody even back then would have been, oh, well, let's like be developing this into a tourist trap or something. You know, come see the old abandoned Spanish fort. But it's, this is a good one. I like the, as Ditko is very good at, just the dynamic poses and, you know, the way he has Spider-Man moving, the movement, he does really good. You know, some of the faces, you know, he kind of loses a little bit on. But the dynamism of just how he's got Spider-Man in the fights with the Lizard is, you know, superb. So,
yeah.
Anything else to talk about on this issue?
I liked in the beginning when Spider-Man's taking a paper and, like, you know, drops like a dime.
Yeah. Doesn't want to swipe a paper off of someone. That's good. He's a hero. He's going to pay for that paper.
Yeah. And we also got moving forward a little bit with the Peter-Betty romance, because there's that one panel where he's, you know, about to probably ask her out, but then Jonah's like, Parker! You know?
Call him That develops through all these issues, and it'll continue on into the next episode that we do. But there's some nice development of that going on from issue to issue as you read through these.
And, yeah, it's a nice battle scene when they get into that fort, where they have those couple pages of them when Spider-Man locks him and the Lizard in that one tower, and they're bouncing off the walls, fighting against each other.
Another nice part about that is that's really the cover of this issue. And while it's not a literal exact scene, I like how they did covers back then that featured something from the story, and it wasn't just a pinup poster.
Right, yeah. Because that was how they sold the comics back then, was by the cover.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do now, too, but instead of selling it on, like, what's the story in there, they, you know, in many cases just get, you know, well, they also get, like, you know, a hot cover artist that's not doing the interior of the book that just does covers, you know, in a lot of series, they do that. You know, you'll have Alex Ross, Greg Horn, you know, Adam Hughes, there's a whole bunch of people that all they pretty much do are covers, and the art inside is not the same. Yeah. And I like the Ditko cover on the Ditko book. You know, you look at that cover and you know what you're getting.
This was also one of the episode stories that they pretty much directly adapted in the 60s Spider-Man cartoon, and it was one of the first ones I ever saw of that, along with the Electro episode, I think.
Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, number 7, The Vulture Returns.
And same team as last time.
You want to give the synopsis?
Yeah. Basically, in this issue, we see that the prison system in New York is not exactly the best, because the Vulture is able to steal parts from the workshop to build another harness, which allows him to fly over the prison walls and escape to an abandoned farmhouse or something. Yeah. I think it's like an abandoned farmhouse or something where he has
a... with a silo. That's what I was talking about. This is another one. It's like within sight of the city, and you got this big abandoned farmhouse with a silo that he just takes up residence in. This is kind of wacky.
And when Spidey catches wind of the Vulture coming back, he thinks, oh, I'll just pull out the Reed Richards magnet device I was able to build the last time the Vulture showed up. But this time, Vulture has actually modified his harness so that the same trick won't work twice, and he clobbers Spider-Man pretty good, and actually ends up spraining his arm, and he has to walk around in a sling for most of the rest of the issue. And of course he gets, you know, made fun of by Flash and his classmates while he's, you know, he can't tell him that, oh, I was fighting the Vulture, what were you doing, Flash? Can't do any of that. He has to stand and take it. And the Vulture actually hits close to home, because he comes to the Daily Bugle wanting to steal the payroll, and Spidey, you know, Peter has to slip out quietly and change into Spider-Man and pretty much fight against the Vulture one-armed, because his arm is still sprained. And of course he's able to defeat the Vulture, and we get a nice end scene with Jonah's mouth covered up in webbing, and Peter and Betty kind of taking a quiet moment together while he's running around cursing all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the fact that they just, like, let these criminals run free in the machine shop, and he's, like, cramming these parts into his, you know, prison overalls. He's back in his cell making his new flying harness and everything. It's like, and they really don't pay too close of attention to these criminals.
Well, he's the best behaved prisoner in the place, so yeah, he's not going to steal anything.
He's been in there for like 3 months. And another thing that I find very interesting is, like, I don't know about your house, Chris, but, you know, the bedroom. How high is the ceiling in a bedroom in a house? In a house out in the sticks in New York, you know, in Forest Hills. I mean, what do they got, like 12-foot vaulted ceilings here? I mean, the ceilings in my house are like maybe 10 feet up, and if, like, my kid was, like, hanging off the ceiling and I walked in the room, I'd see him. You know, Aunt May, I mean, she's, like, standing in there, and Peter's, like, sticking to the ceiling, and she totally doesn't see him. It's like, well, okay, you know.
She's so old. She can't look up. She can only look forward.
She can only, exactly. She's just, her head is stuck in one position and one position only. That's pretty funny.
But, yeah, that happens a lot. Him just hanging around on the ceiling, having to dodge, you know, somebody coming in on him, or hiding under the covers while he's still in his Spider-Man outfit.
Yeah.
The Vulture isn't a fool. I liked when Spider-Man, you know, activated his anti-magnet device, he kind of faked like it was working again, and then he just flies up and just smacks him right upside the jaw.
That was really good. I liked that. Where he did fake him out, and he timed coming up, and Spider-Man ignores his spider sense. That'll teach you, Peter. Don't ignore your spider sense. My spider sense is starting to tingle. But why? The Vulture must be a prisoner on the ground by now. There can't be any danger here. Boom. Takes it right on the chin. Surprise, Spider-Man.
And then he just clobbers him, and he gets him in, like, midair, and he can't shoot a web to hang on to anything, so he just slam, hits the roof.
Some more really nice fight scenes. I am a little suspect of how the Vulture, I mean, he's got a pretty decent wingspan there. He's, like, able to just, like, fly around indoors the way he does.
Well, it's like the ceilings. The walls are farther apart then.
Yeah. And at the end, he webs Jonah's mouth shut.
It's always great when he webbed, like, last time when he webbed his pants.
Yeah. He's running around. Mmph, mmph. Making all these noises.
And Peter just kicks back with Betty. He's like, yeah, he's going to be a while.
And no more of the advancement on the romance there.
Mm-hmm. Which is nice because we're, you know, gradually seeing Peter, you know, as he gets more and more, you know, into his powers, he's getting more and more out of his shell, and he's more approachable to people that he probably wouldn't have had the courage to when he was just, you know, regular
right.
Peter Parker.
Exactly. All in all, I thought it was another really solid issue. I think all of these that we're looking at here, I mean, these are all classics.
Oh, yeah.
Next up is my nemesis, the Living Brain, the special tribute to teenagers issue.
And this one has two stories, just like issues 1 and 2 had. In story number 1, we see Peter, or Spider-Man rather, fighting off against a robot called the Living Brain, which might possibly hold the key to Spider-Man's identity, which, you know, Peter is, you know, freaking out about, you know, what if it does, you know, solve my identity, but it turns out that it has to be translated, so he's like, ooh, I'm spared, don't have to worry about that. But then some crooks try to steal it so they can sell it in some, you know, hightail it to Europe and sell it to somebody, but they accidentally activate it, and so Spider-Man has to stop the Living Brain from wreaking havoc at his school. And prior to the Living Brain going loose, we see Peter and Flash finally, you know, venting their frustrations with each other with a boxing match, and unfortunately, well, first we get Peter actually, you know, puts too much of his spider strength into it and sends Flash flying out of the ring. But the other time, when people were screaming about the Living Brain, you know, roaming the halls and causing havoc, Peter, you know, is in mid-punch, and so everybody thinks he, you know, sucker punches him when Flash turns his head at the screams. And so, once again, Parker luck, Peter can't win. And then, in the second story, is an interesting story because it is a Spider-Man story that is penciled by Jack Kirby and inked by Steve Ditko. And in this we see Peter spying on Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, and a party he's throwing, and he, you know, interrupts it, and they get into a little bit of a battle that eventually all the Fantastic Four arrive, and Spider-Man takes off and leaves a little heart for Sue Storm, so he's edging on to Reed's girl.
Yeah, and the first story, you know, what, you know, I made the comment about Ditko doing faces, and he's hot and cold at that, because if you look at, like, for instance, page 8 of the story, both the Peter and the Flash faces are very nicely done. But, you know, you look at these workman guys, like on page 7, that one guy looks like a weird kind of pig face going on there.
Well, he is a crook. So.
And, you know, he details it out. I think when it gets small, though, is when he kind of loses it, because you look at, like, on bottom corner of page 7, bottom right-hand panel, bottom left-hand panel on page 8, they're just very rudimentary faces. When he's got the larger area to work on, he does a really nice job, and then when it's kind of smaller, he maybe, you know, just doesn't put that much detail into it.
Mm-hmm. I think he does a nice job on page 4, the second to last panel, with Peter's face.
Yeah. And even the little floating, you know, Vulture, Aunt May, and Jonah heads. You know, that, you know, he's thinking about, you know, hey, what'll these guys come up with? I find also that the robot, the living brain. This is a standard comic book robot, where they think nothing of, so if you look at the design of the thing, it's on these like tiny little, ball bearing feet or something, and it's, this thing's got to be top heavy. How does this thing even stay upright? It's got to be, some major league gyroscope in there or something keeping this thing upright. And it's just, its ability to, autonomous, thought and everything is just amazing. This is, the IBM clone. They have it. I work for ICM, the International Computing Machines Corporation, where, of course, IBM is International Business Machines Corporation. So it's like pretty much, Stan like taking a real life company and not going too far out of his way to change it around a little bit.
Right. And this is also the issue where Peter's glasses break and we don't see them again, pretty much.
Yeah, and, one would think that Aunt May would notice this, although maybe the fact that she's, spends a lot of time in the hospital subsequent to this, she lost a little bit when she went under the knife there.
She well, didn't think she's so doting on him. She'd be like, "Peter, where are your glasses?
Yeah.
Can you see all right, Peter?"
You know what? I like the torch story. First off, I like it because, unlike many times when they draw a car in a comic book, it's kind of like a nondescript car. Here, Johnny's got a Stingray, and it looks sort of like a Stingray. It's very nicely styled. They're talking about his, XK Jag that he was driving last week and everything. And it's nice to see some specific vehicles and not just generic comic book cars. But Spider-Man is doing some crazy stuff with his webbing in this story.
Yeah.
Like that bat. That's some skill, making that bat that looks like that. He's hidden fonts of talent Peter's got here in artistry.
He's a biochemist and an artist.
Yeah. And I'm also amazed at stuff that the torch can do with flame. He makes it shaped like an arrow and, like a net and little saw blades and stuff. That's some classic Kirby stuff. I like Spider-Man made these wings that he's gliding around with.
He has those, parachute thought thing he's got.
Oh, he uses parachutes a lot. He made a parachute in the Vulture issue. He's making parachutes here. He does a pretty good job with those, with parachutes out of web.
And they're strong enough to be able to be filled with sand and then toss at the torch.
Yep. What do you think of the Jack Kirby pencils with Ditko inking?
I think the images that really make it stand out that it's Kirby is the splash and then the first panel on the opposite page. Like with the eyes on the Kirby Spider-Man, you can really tell it isn't, and then the body just looks a lot more like muscled and not as slender as how Ditko usually draws him.
Yeah, the faces are all Kirby faces too.
You can
really tell. I mean, there's a definite difference between how Ditko does a face and how Kirby does a face, and these are, there's definite Kirby there, which, Kirby was doing FF at the time, so Stan probably is like, this is more of a FF story that Spidey guests in.
Yeah.
It's a little short, but it was fun.
Yeah, and I like the little web heart at the end.
For goodness sake, look what he left. He spun it out of his web fluid for me.
Oh, you wonder why Reed never like punches him in the face when he sees him again.
Reed still hadn't made his move back then, I don't think.
That's true. That'd been great if this was like after they got married.
Yeah, Reed had to kind of buy a clue, I think.
Yeah. It's like that scientific brain. He's like so focused on science, he's like, oh, woman is interested in me, does not compute. Let me go build an ultimate nullifier, and I'll think that over.
Yeah.
And back with the living brain story, I like how Peter uses Flash's, you know, having been knocked out and him waking up and these two crooks, you know, running into him, how he uses that to his advantage.
Right.
Like, hey, maybe Flash is Spider-Man. You know, put that in everybody's mind and they all are just like all over Flash.
Yeah, that's why Puny Parker seemed to knock Flash out, because he couldn't beat him, you know, to think he's Spider-Man.
Right. He has a nice expression, too, when he's thinking that over. He's like, I'm going to be crafty.
Anything else on this one? Or are we going to move on to Electro?
That pretty much sums it up. I mean, at this point, they're still using the Now magazine, which I think they eventually just toss that aside and they just go full on Daily Bugle, but that's still showing up at this point.
But they at least make the particular point to mention that it's that Jonah does both Now magazine and the Bugle. And some of those couple of the very first episodes, you know, there was a little bit of a, you know, mismatch when it was like just Now magazine, and we kind of lost some of that.
Right. All right, so issue number 9, The Man Called Electro. And in this issue, we basically have the first appearance of the Electro, because most of these stories are first appearances of villains, although next episode we're going to be talking about the two-parter with Doc Ock. But for now, we are still going through the classic staple of villains, and this one features the first appearance of Electro. And we also have, I believe this is the first time that Aunt May actually is in the hospital, or has fallen ill so far, I believe. And as Bob alluded to last time, so that he's able to pay the hospital bills, Peter fakes it like Spider-Man and Electro are the same person, you know, making some photographs, and uses that to get the money needed to pay the hospital bills for his aunt. But then at the end, when Spider-Man has to show up to fight against Electro, he, you know, sells some to avoid getting sued by Jonah, he gives him some pictures of the Spider-Man Electro battle, so that everything's, you know, forgiven in the end. And also, we see Betty having some, you know, being worried about Peter taking pictures of all these different supervillains attacking Spider-Man, which really comes to a head in the Doc Ock story that we're going to be talking about next episode.
Now, this is interesting, as you mentioned, because this is kind of the first time that Peter actually crossed – well, he kind of crossed the line back in number 4 when he was, like, throwing the sand up in the air and kind of essentially faking the photos there. But here, he more explicitly fakes some photos, which is a little more – outside of the boundaries than what he did back in number 4. Mm-hmm. He kind of, you know, he does have his reasons and everything, but it is atypical because as the character develops, he stops doing things like that. He stops sort of doing things that are morally questionable and is more universally heroic. I like on page 21 of the story, second to the last page. Some of the expressions that Ditko does on Jonah are just priceless. Especially the one in the bottom corner where he's like kind of rubbing his hands together and it's like, yes. You know, I'm robbing him. I'll make a fortune with these pictures. I deserve it because he's a fool, you know. He's like just like really maniacal looking and, you know.
And then in the first row we have these like faces of anger, and then in the middle we've got like these, oh, pictures? Huh. And then at the bottom he's like, you know, putting on a fake smile. He's like trying to, you know, patch things up with Pete for the photos. It's a really nice progression of his facial expressions on that page.
And the Peter and Betty romance is kicking it up a little notch here. She visits Aunt May in the hospital. She sits with Peter while she's having her surgery, and at the end they're walking off into the night together, feeling the first pangs of that emotion we call love. How sweet.
That's also a really dynamic Peter face.
Yeah.
On top of that page.
One thing I found very interesting, I don't know if Stan or Steve changed their mind partway through the issue, but when you first see Electro, you're kind of getting the thought that he gets these powers from his suit. He's got all these wires all over his body, and he's kind of charging himself up on this big machine. And then as they tell his origin a little later on, you find out, oh, he has these intrinsic electrical powers that he got from a lightning accident while he was up on a high line. And the suit just helps him channel it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, when you were reading that the first time, did you kind of not catch, you know, did you think that it was the suit giving him the powers at first?
No, I kind of didn't pick up on that, I have to admit.
I mean, I guess because, you know, it's kind of, when you read it, you know Electro, so it's not like you're reading it for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't think of it that way. But I'm kind of like looking at it as, you know, if I was a kid reading this for the first time back in the day, how would I interpret that? It was kind of interesting. I wonder if that was just accidental or done kind of on purpose.
Well, we've seen... Well, we've seen Stan, you know, flip-flop between Jonah being a magazine and a newspaper publisher, so maybe halfway through he's like, oh, it's not the suit, it's him himself. It's possible. And also, like, the first page where he's telling his origin when he's just Max Dillon, and he's just, like, you know, casually licking out a cigarette. Well, this guy's like going to fry at the top of the pole.
Well, the other thing that's a possibility is, you know, if Stan was scripting this as he went along and hadn't looked forward, he could have like been putting him in the suit and everything and charging up. And then when he gets to, you know, that later page, he's like, oh, wait a minute. He's supposed to have gotten powers from getting this lightning bolt on him.
Yeah.
Oops.
Whoops. And this is also another instance of Spider-Man getting defeated the first time he goes up against a villain because he's not, you know, prepared for... He tries to, you know, grab him on the shoulder and after webbing him in the face, but when he touches him, he gets shocked. And he had not anticipated that. So then he has to develop a way of defeating him other than the standard... means he usually defeats his villains.
And another instance of him sneaking into a store and leaving the money, he does say, where is that page? Something like, the store is going to wonder where this money just appeared from on their counter when he got the rubber gloves and the rubber boots.
The Jonah expressions are just great all throughout this thing. Like when it's like, Spider-Man's up on the roof, and he's like, what? Where? He got the cigar coming out of his mouth, the same as when Peter asked for $1,000. And he's just like, what? $1,000?
I don't understand. This is a common staple of fiction, but I don't understand why these people aren't just honest. You know, it's like Jonah, you know, my aunt is dying. She's in the hospital and she needs an operation. You know, it's, you know, then Jonah's like a total, you know, big jerk if he like says no, whereas he's like, well, I have my own personal reasons. And he's like, well, I suppose you want to buy yourself a car to impress the girls. You know, it's like, yeah. Just tell him what you need the money for, you schmuck. Get on with it. I guess it won't cause
that'd
the point of conflict.
Talking about your aunt in the hospital.
Yeah.
You can tell him your aunt's in the hospital.
I also like how Jonah just like is going crazier and crazier. He's like just making stuff up, you know, and it's like in the next issue, it gets really bad. We'll talk about that when we get there. But I mean, he's like just really stretching to, you know, blame stuff on Spider-Man. It's like, oh, Spider-Man must be Electro. It's not bad enough that he's Spider-Man. He's trying to, you know, publishing stuff saying that Spider-Man is Electro and Spider-Man's running around robbing banks in his Electro identity.
That reminds me of a line from the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon by Jonah. He's like, the Daily Bugle only prints facts, and whatever it takes to tie those facts together.
And the pinup at the end, do you have that in the reprint that you've got?
Which pinup is it?
It's right after the last page of the story. The last page of the story is 22. Right after that, there's a full-page pinup of Spidey kind of flipping around the city.
No, mine does not have that.
It's really nice.
Thank you, Barnes & Noble. Well, I paid $13 for this, so I can't complain.
So, and then the last one we've got coming up is number 10, The Enforcers. Four bad guys. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention an interesting correlation is how in this story we have Peter's aunt in the hospital, ill, and he kind of blows off all his classmates in this kind of similar to how he was in the Master Planner storyline when he got to college and his aunt was sick and he pretty much just turned a deaf ear to everybody who was trying to, you know, approach him friendly, and they all just think he's, you know, arrogant and everything because they're not talking to him, even though he has his sick aunt on his mind.
Which brings us back to the, why don't you just tell people?
Because then you couldn't, it wouldn't be an interesting story. Because he's the loner. All right, so Enforcers. In this one we have...
And the big man. Don't forget the big man.
Oh, yeah. The big man. And this is also, instead of Art Simek, this is lettered by Sam Rosen. And in this episode, this issue, rather, this is the introduction of the Enforcers and the big man. The Enforcers are going to show up a couple issues down the line. They're going to return in the first appearance of the Green Goblin, actually, in issue 14. And the Enforcers consist of Ox, who is the typical big, dumb, strong guy of the team. Then you have Montana, who is dressed as a cowboy and he has a lasso. And then you have Fancy Dan, who's kind of this martial arts type guy. And they're... The leader of the gang is the big man, who is just a guy in a mask with a gun, and he's the one who puts all these, you know, crimes together for the Enforcers to orchestrate.
But he does have that big double-breasted suit and the slouch hat, so...
Which has to count for something. And in this issue, continuing off of the last one, everything didn't end on a completely happy note because Aunt May is still in the hospital, and Peter actually gives his aunt a blood transfusion, which is going to come back into play way, way down the line for the Master Planner storyline. And after Anmei gets radiated blood, she's feeling much better and is going off to take a vacation. And so now with his aunt out from under the weather, he can focus his attention on taking care of the enforcers. And we eventually find out that the identity of the big man is actually someone who works at the Daily Bugle, a reporter by the name of Foswell, who later on will become a supporting character in the series.
Yeah, it's interesting that this issue also they cast doubts on, you know, is Jonah the big man? You know, has he gone that far around the bend? And Jonah is, again, kind of manufacturing stuff. I mean, he's essentially asking Foswell to make stuff up, you know, about Spider-Man. Here, I want you to write this story, and here's what you should have it say. It's like, well, aren't you still suffering the effects of, like, claiming Spider-Man was Electro? Don't worry about that. It's my paper.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, having, you know, Jonah being, you know, Jonah, and having this Foswell guy who's kind of, you know, mousy is a good way to cover up for the big man being Foswell.
You know what I found interesting in this episode or this issue? I always mix those up. What's the propellant that, you know, causes these webs to shoot out, and what kind of force is behind these webs? If you think of it, you know, because like you just look at like a little can, you get like a can of silly string or something, right? It's world over used to like simulate webbing and stuff, right? And usually, I mean, well, what is a can of silly string going to do? It's going to go like, you know, 5, maybe 10 feet or something. I mean, he shoots these webs like really long distances, you know, like 100 feet, you know, whatever. And in this issue, he sticks his spider signal on the end of it and uses his web. It looks like he's using the force of the web shooter to propel this thing, which is, you know, even if it's relatively light, and it's a pretty decent sized hunk of metal here, it looks like the thing's got a weigh, I don't know, like at least 0.5 pound or something from the size of it. And he shoots that thing all the way out of the building, you know. Just weird random thoughts that occur to me while I'm reading these things. It's just got to be some considerable force behind that web shooter fluid.
Reed Richards doesn't make silly string. So I have to say, looking at the... Does yours have the unused cover?
No, it does not.
I think that the unused cover looks a lot more interesting than the one they have for issue number 10. Because on the unused cover, they've got the big man in the foreground with his gun out, and then behind him, we see Montana, Fancy Dan, and Ox all getting up on Spider-Man, and then with the cover that they use, it's just got Spider-Man on the web with the big man and the enforcers kind of in the background. And it's, you know, like an all-blue background on the cover, and it doesn't really look that interesting.
It is one of the least compelling covers that they've ever done, you know, to date. It's, you know, it doesn't have very much detail. If you look at most of the other covers, they've got a lot of stuff going on. This one, very minimalistic. And, you know, if they actually created a second version, that they picked this one is somewhat surprising. Also surprising because normally there's a background on the cover. You know, you'll have buildings, you'll have, you know, something going on. I guess on the Living Brain issue 8, you didn't, but you've got the torch, you've got the inset circles, you've got, you know, lots of other elements on there. You didn't have just so much blank space.
Right.
Oh, and, you know, lest we forget, you know, and it's advertised on the cover now that I'm looking at the cover. In this issue, learn why J. Jonah Jameson really hates Spider-Man. I thought that was really nicely done by Stan.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that he hates him is because he is envious.
It's the way he thinks of it, you know, it's like, all my life I've been interested in only one thing, making money. And yet Spider-Man risks his life day after day with no thought of reward. If a man like him is good, is a hero, then what am I? I can never respect myself while he lives. Spider-Man represents everything that I'm not. He's brave, powerful, and unselfish. The truth is, I envy him. I, J. Jonah Jameson, millionaire, man of the world, civic leader, I'd give everything I own to be the man that he is. But I can never climb to his level. So all that remains for me is to try to tear him down, because heaven help me, I'm jealous of him. And that, right there, right, that's the reason Jonah hates Spider-Man. And nicely put, Stan.
Mm-hmm. I like the, spider that Spider-Man puts together for that just random thug.
Yeah, you can see the little wooden framework he built it on when they kind of show that reverse angle on it.
Yeah.
More of his artistic nature shining through. It's kind of like that bat that he made in issue number 8. Here he's got this big...
Jet skis.
Yeah. Big giant spider, you know, like a Shelob kind of spider going on here for people who watch Lord of the Rings.
And Gollum pops up in the web. That'd be awesome.
Oh, and a big setback in the Peter-Betty romance here. As, you know, they have some setup here because Betty owes money to the mob. This is what gets Spider-Man or Peter, you know, hooked up and interested in the enforcers in the first place. But then at the end of the episode, the issue, Betty leaves because she doesn't want to, you know, cause Peter to get mixed up with that sort of element. And there's...
She kind of roughed him up earlier.
Yeah.
He tried to stop him from roughing up Betty.
She made it all the way to Pennsylvania, where she sits alone in some seedy hotel room crying. Life is so meaningless, so empty without Peter. He's all I had, all I ever wanted, and yet I can't turn to him now.
Yeah, and we're going to find out about that in the next couple of issues with the Doc Ock two-parter.
Yep. Those are some good ones coming up. Next five.
Mm-hmm.
Next five, we get a Doc Ock two-parter. We get the intro of Mysterio. We get the intro of the Green Goblin and the intro of Kraven the Hunter. That's some good stuff.
And that's annual time. Oh, yeah. But yeah, all in all, I think these are all pretty solid issues.
Yeah, I think really, you look at the first 15 issues and the first annual, and that's like some of the classic, you know, if you're a Spider-Man fan, go, I mean, they're reprinted so many different places, you can get the essential for relatively cheap, you know, the first volume.
If you want to read it in color, I'm talking to you, Will. Mr. I don't want to buy anything in black and white that's cheap, then you might want to check out your Barnes & Noble, because a couple years back, there was this tryout experiment with Marvel and Barnes & Noble where they made some of their masterworks as these $12.95 paperback versions, and they did 4 of Spider-Man, which collects the entire Lee Ditko run and the first 2 of the Romita lead run, and I got all those, and then they also had one of Fantastic Four, one of Daredevil, I think a couple of the X-Men. They also had the first Silver Surfer masterwork, so you might want to, because I see them, you know, all the time in like clearance or something, because they're trying to get rid of them, because unfortunately it didn't pan out, which kind of sucks, because I'd like to have more $13 masterworks, but you should be able to find them relatively cheap. They might still have them there. Or you could get the omnibus.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, you know, the Omnibus is a good deal because, well, I guess if you would have bought it when it first came out, you got to watch for these things because, you know, DCBS, when that first came out, they had it at 50% off. So $50, you're getting the first 30-some-odd issues of Spider-Man and the annual and all the letters pages, you know, all that.
That's the price of one Masterwork.
Right.
And you're getting like four.
Well, I mean, the Masterworks, when you get them on discount, you know, I usually pay about $30,
like
$32.
Yeah.
But the point is that if you bought the same four volumes at even those softcover ones at full price plus sales tax at the Barnes & Noble, you'd be paying almost as much.
Yeah.
So it's really worth checking out some of these places where you can pre-order when they're solicited. If you see an omnibus coming out that is something that you really like, because a lot of times you will make it worth your while to start ordering from these guys, any of them. You know, whether it's Heroes Corner, DCBS, or whatever, you can often cover your shipping and everything by just getting some of the really good deals. And when I first started with DCBS myself, that was how I started. I was pretty much just getting my Masterworks and hardcovers and other collected editions because the discount I was getting there was just way beyond what, you know, the local shop could match. And, you know, it really was worth my while. And I got a lot of really nice hardcovers, you know, that way. So.
Yeah.
I like my hardcovers.
All right. Do you have anything else to add?
I think that'll do it. Again, go out and get these if you haven't read them. This is the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. And you can also, we didn't mention this, but if you don't mind reading comics on the computer, you could always get the 40 years of Spider-Man.
Yeah, now, if you want to get that, now that's going to be the entire, you know, you get like 400 and some odd issues of Spider-Man on there, but those are out of print. Those guys lost the license, and Marvel's doing those themselves now. And what's interesting is Marvel's putting out essentially, I forget how many issues. They solicited a couple of them last month, but they're 40, not 50. That. Yeah. I mean, you're only getting like 50 issues maybe, and it's $30. Whereas the other one, you got like 400 issues, and it was like, you know, $40. So if you are not opposed to reading them on the computer, search around on the internet or, you know, places and see if you can find some of those, because those are a really good deal. You get a lot of comics for your money with those.
Yep, I have the complete collection, which is the updated one of the 40 years, which I think has up to Civil War, maybe.
Yeah, I don't remember. That's the one that was all on one disc, though, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to the early one, it was out on CD. It was on CD-ROM instead of on DVD-ROM. So it was like multiple discs, and then they did the DVD-ROM update. That's the one I have also. And it's everything's all on one DVD, and, you know, it's really nice. There's an FF. There's an Avengers, an X-Men, Hulk, Ghost Rider. There's a whole bunch of them.
The ones Marvel are doing are Iron Man and the Hulk. I think it's like DVD archives or something for those two.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that wraps up this episode up, and I think that next time we'll be talking about issues 11 to 15, where we'll be getting a two-part with Doc Ock, first appearance of another one of my favorites, Mysterio, first Green Goblin, and also Kraven the Hunter.
Yep.
And the return of Chameleon as well.
Ooh, can hardly wait.
All right, well, since it's episode 75, you know, it wouldn't be a special celebratory episode unless I had something to announce. And so watch the feed in the next couple of weeks, because in the second week of July, I believe, I'll be interviewing the author of the upcoming Steve Ditko retrospective, Strange and Stranger, the World of Steve Ditko, Blake Bell.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to that. Because, you know, I'm the Ditko supporter.
Mr. Ditko and his number one fan.
I've been eBaying a lot of Ditko stuff. I was able to get the issues 3 through 6 of the Beware the Creeper series for like $13.
Oh, that's cool.
In very good fine. Yeah, that was a really good deal. I guess I still can't believe I got that cheap. So that should be up in a couple of weeks on the feed. And I'm really looking forward to that interview. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so now I think we turn it over to you, because I think that you have your own podcast that you do.
Yes, a comic book page at comicbookpage.com. We do a weekly comic spotlight. It comes out every Monday. We review a current Marvel, a current DC, and a current indie. Every now and again, we'll do an extra. We do preview spotlight once a month, where we highlight issues from the current month's previews. We'll be coming out in a couple of weeks with the July previews edition. What are you going to put in there, Chris? You give any thought to it?
I think I'm going to give a shout out to a couple of trades, because I'm starting to switch more towards the trade side.
Cool.
So I think I'm going to give a shout out to a couple of those. And where can people send those if they want to? Some of my listeners might want to contribute to that. So where should
sure.
they send them?
Sure. If you go out to comicbookpage.com and look on the forum, there's a thread that's got all the information about it. And then you can mail submissions to the guys, THEGUYS, at comicbookpage.com. And open submission policy, we want to hear from whoever wants to send us something, because we really just want to get as many diverse viewpoints on what people are excited about. And the real format there is just, if you're looking at previews, you're looking at the online solicits, also on the thread on our forum, I've got pointers to all the major and most of the minor publisher online solicits, so you can see what's coming up in September that's going to be in the July previews just by following those links. They point out to places like Comics Continuum and Newsarama and places. But just tell us what's exciting you, what you've got on your mind as, boy, that looks really exciting. You know? And then also once a month we do the Mayo Report episodes, where we do some looking at the sales figures for the top 300 comics and the top 100 trades from Diamond. And that's that.
Awesome. All right, well, if you want to send an email to the Amazing Spidercast, you can send those to amzspidercast@gmail.com. You can also send us an audio comment at 206-350-8184. And you can download current episodes of the Amazing Spidercast at theamazingspidercast.libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com. And you can also check out our episode archive over at theamazingspidercast.podomatic.com. And you can swing by thecomicforums.com to chat some Spider-Man with us. Just scroll down. There's a directory of all the different comic podcast-related forums, and we're pretty much, I think, the second one in that directory. So just click on there, join up, and start chatting about us about whatever Spider-Man-related stuff you want to talk about.
See, and aren't you lucky you didn't make it the spectacular Spider-Cast at the beginning? Then you'd have to rename it to be the AAM Spectacular Spider-Cast to try to get yourself closer to the front of that list.
Right.
Sorry, AAM Marcosia.
Yeah, I got that.
I'll have to go and update the super. I'll do that tonight or tomorrow. Your the latest supervillain showdown. Looks like the Hypno Hustler is gonna sneak a win over...
Of course, it's the Hypno Hustler.
What a mort that guy is, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, Chris and I are pretty close to doing our entire episode, page-by-page review of that issue, and we were hoping that you'd join us for that.
I'll have to dig it out. I haven't even thought of that issue in a really long... I mean, it was a fine issue. I mean, it's just, you know, it's fun to make fun of the Hypno Hustler because he is such oofy doofus of a villain.
Yes.
It's just funny because the only picture I could find of the guy, he's not on Sam's page. He's got like all these Spider-Man villains. He doesn't have Hypno Hustler. And the only image I could find of him was this kind of like a Polaroid photo, and it says "not a serious threat." You saw that? I didn't go out of my way to find that one. That was just the first one that I found.
Yeah. It was awesome seeing him in rain, though.
Yeah. That's just all right.
All right, well, thanks, Bob, for stopping by, and we'll see you in a month or so for the next one of these, and hopefully Jen will be there.
Okay. Yeah, she doesn't want to miss it, because that's a spectacularly good run, 11 through 15, and then the annual.
Yeah, Jen, get out of the 90s. All right, well, thanks to everybody out there who's listening, and thanks for sticking with us for 75 episodes. I have no idea what I'm doing for 100. I know it's got to be big, gigantic, ginormous, huge, epic, mind-blowing, and I'm still working on that. I'll get back to you when I think of something. But, you know, thanks for listening. Thanks for your continued support of the show. It really means a lot. Everybody who posts, everybody who emails. Thanks, everybody. And I'll see you guys next week, hopefully with Jen in tow.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.